Well, the steering committee has reconvened. We're back.
Yeah.
We're back. We're at our new unofficial home, but kind of becoming our official home. Brews on Facts,
our sponsor Brews Beers. This is one of their two tasting rooms in Denver, and it sure beats my garage.
It beats a lot of things, I would say, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's as far as places to be.
Beer's cheaper in my garage, but it's not as good.
The ambiance is good. It's delicious Belgian beer.
Yeah, but it is a little loud in here, so if you can't hear us.
Well, Ryan's going to work his magic on the filter and the processing, and this is going to come in crystal clear.
Anyway, just realize these floods in Europe have all sort of happened since we last recorded. I know we have friends, especially in Germany, a lot of listeners, European countries, but especially around the Nürburgring. Just want you guys all to know we're thinking of you.
I'm watching the videos that Misha's uploading. My heart goes out to you guys. You guys are doing the Lord's work, helping out with everybody else out there.
If you don't know how to organize a rescue effort, do you see some of that drone footage? Just like miles of ambulances all perfectly parked and fire engines.
It shouldn't be a surprise that the Germans were very efficient in their response.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it's just the floods look like they're devastating and a lot of people affected by it. And I was thinking it's really too bad that they've they deal with COVID all last year and now they're shut down again for this. But they're doing the right thing. They're trying to help everybody out. It's really, it's admirable. So Misha and all of our friends out there, our heart goes out to you. We're going to make a donation in the name of the steering committee. So keep up the good work.
So wish we could do more, but we went out for a drive the other day.
Yeah, we had a great drive last weekend. Yeah, that was awesome.
Our friend Andrew and his 2006 C4.
Yeah.
He had his daughter with him and Doug.
I had my daughter with me as well.
Yes. Yeah. Three silver cars. That was about all they had in common. Well, yeah. I mean, two of them are Porsches, but it was a fun drive.
I joke about how, it looked like we were a team, but I was like the support vehicle in my station wagon.
It better work.
You guys were the actual racers, and I'm just following behind to make sure you guys don't need spare parts or anything.
I think it worked. Unfortunately, you just can't go middle of the day on the weekend and expect to have a lot of open road.
But I thought even considering, I thought we still got some good. We got some good shots, where we had some pretty good uninterrupted spots.
It was
I had a good time.
It was fun. I broke 2,000 miles on the GT4.
There you go. Time for its first oil change.
I'm still driving it. Yeah. 2,000 miles. I know it's not a whole lot for having owned it now, 10 months, 9 months?
That's probably the slowest, or that's probably the longest it's ever taken you to get to 2,000 miles in any of your cars.
So the drive was great, but for me, one of the most exciting parts of the day was seeing a car I've never seen before.
Yeah, rare cars,
on the streets
rare
of,
car alert.
Yeah, not
rare
a particularly valuable car relative to maybe some other cars that would be of such interest to me, but a really neat and special car just the same. I don't know if it was the De Tomaso version or the Cavalli version, but a Mangusta. This was the car, I guess, mid-2000s, built another one of these cars built on a Mustang, basically. The Painos, I think it was the Esperante was another one that same time. This is a pretty cool-looking car. It's one of those cars that must share taillights with other models, probably not nearly as expensive or whatever.
They like do something where they turn them like sideways or something.
Yeah, maybe. It's kind of a throwback car, in the spirit of the original De Tomaso, I guess, the Pantera.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was original
with some
De
Mustang,
Tomaso,
with some Ford roots at least. The Pantera had the Ford V8s in them. So.
Right, and they used to sell them at Lincoln Mercury dealerships for some reason.
Yeah.
It's a car I had never seen. You said you had never seen one, and if you have to be listening, and you're in Denver,
I've never seen one in the wild. I didn't even know they were federalized in the
silver,
United States.
So cool.
Maybe they aren't. Maybe this guy brought it in.
Tried to give him a thumbs up, but he wasn't even looking my way.
That's a rare. I would say on the like in the rare car world, you know, if you were, you know, playing, if we could assign like values and scales to certain cars, that would be a this, high point one.
So I was watching a documentary with Molly, my wife, just before I left to meet you here, and it was called The Booksellers. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's all about, it's sort of a peek into the rare book world. Just New York City in particular.
Good?
It is good, but they, you know, what makes a book desirable, basically? Well, it's got to be rare, but it's also got to be, I blew the punchline. Sorry. Never mind. Basically, what makes a book valuable? It's got to be rare and it's got to be desirable. Did I screw that up or not? I don't know.
I think now you definitely
have. Okay, all right.
Obviously, a lot of books are rare because they're, you know, that just means there weren't a lot printed, but what makes it desirable?
Well, I mean, it's got to be interesting content or beautiful or, you know, something unusual about it. But to me, that the Mangusta is sort of that car. To me, that's way more interesting. I saw Gallardo today. It was nice.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, I see Gallardos pretty regularly. I had never seen one of these. You know, I'd probably take the Gallardo over it, and I'm sure the Gallardo's worth at least twice as much. But it was just neat to see something. At 45, Doug, to see something, a car that I haven't seen before is still kind of
cool. I get excited about those types of things, too. Yeah, it's almost like, even if it's terrible, objectively terrible, but if it's rare, it's like bird watching. It's like when you see the rare thing that you shouldn't see, like, there it is in the wild.
Right.
And to see it in the wild is really what's exciting.
So that was kind of cool. And the drive was great, too. What else you...
Well, then... Well, I was gonna, I've been telling, obviously in the last episode, I told my harrowing tale of driving across Kansas with no headlights at night. So I've, that story has, gotten around to our listeners, and I've gotten some hoopty stories back from listeners.
Okay.
I wanted to share one with you.
Yeah. Okay.
It might even be worse than what I did. So, a friend of mine, driving his 2002 Pontiac Sunfire.
You
familiar with the car?
I am familiar with it. I think it's the, it was basically the Cavalier twin, right?
In some ways the Sunfire was, I mean, you have to look it up if you're not familiar. It was like definitely like bolted on a lot of like, you know.
Lots of hard plastic.
Lots of hard plastic on the outside. Somehow things like spoilers and front chins, but like no performance.
I'm sorry,
whatsoever.
Spoilers and what, Doug?
Front chins, like a chin spoiler.
I thought you were dropping a new term on me.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay, like a front chin. I think it had like a front, like faux, like air
dam. I wasn't going to act like I knew what you're talking about,
But with no performance.
Sure.
I mean, the pretty soulless, GM build quality interior buttons. And probably front wheel drive V6, I'm guessing, right?
Or probably a four.
Maybe a four. Right. Maybe front wheel drive.
Sorry, this music on the back on the table's creaking.
My back's
killing me.
He actually had this car so long that when I knew him, he still had it. It was even worse then. But he was telling me this whole time about how he had to do a trip up into Western Colorado in the winter.
Yeah.
And his windshield wipers broke.
Okay.
And so he couldn't see anything at all. It was sleeting, it was raining, it was snowing, you're getting that wintry mix.
Yeah.
And so he, much like me, decided, instead of stopping or turning around like a responsible person, that he would just drive behind big 18-wheelers that were just kicking up a lot of moisture up onto
salty
his windshield.
Water
and
whatever.
That was clearing up
that
he said I was barely able to see through my windshield, but that's another hoopty story.
This
might be an ongoing segment.
I'm gonna be
mining our fans and the internet for these types of this. He did not. To this day, he still doesn't have any children. So he did not risk anybody. I think his friend was in the car. I think future brother-in-law.
Okay.
So it could have had a detrimental effect on his family.
His
friend became his brother-in-law.
Okay.
So that could have just completely changed his whole life. He wouldn't have nephews right now if something bad had happened.
Did you see the car? It was on Jalopnik this week. It was one of the prototypical, or one of the original electric cars, and it's defroster for the windshield was literally a hair dryer with a piece of hose off of it to the.
When you say like the original electric cars,
you one of the original, one of those wedge shaped 70s, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, because they had electric cars at the beginning
of for sure, right. But they have electric hair dryers.
That's what I was wondering about. Yeah. All right. So one of those sort of like weird 70s, probably like came out of the gas crisis type things.
Yeah. You probably, bought it from a kit in the back of Popular Science or something. But anyway, so that's always an option.
That'd be a hoopty too.
Yeah.
So, or I should have told my friend he could have also had a hair dryer going on his front windshield.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. All right, we're back. Sorry, I was about ready to have a coughing spell there, so I cut that a little short.
Yeah, Rod just gave me the visual sign you need to cut out for a second.
I am fully vaccinated. Anyway, we actually had an email from a listener, Scott, Evanston, Illinois, and this is a question directed. We don't really solicit emails.
No.
But if you happen to write us, we will
absolutely answer your question if you write to us. So.
Anyway, but so
let's get that email out so they can email us a question.
What is that email?
The email is thesteeringcommitteepodcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
So if you have a question, feel free to email me and we'll answer it.
Scott did email us. Yeah. Basically, I think you are the resident F1 expert. I'm not. So he wants to know why the FIA is basically. How did he phrase it? Sorry.
I think the way he was asking is are they regulating out the racing?
Which is
particularly relevant, and I've been anxious to talk about this. Yeah. I don't know if Scott watched the British Grand Prix. I think last weekend. Might have been 2 weekends.
That's probably what he was referring to. Was there a specific incident?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So at the moment right now, the world championship, Max Verstappen, he races for the Red Bull Formula One team. It's been in a comfortable lead over Lewis Hamilton, the next closest competitor. He races for Mercedes F1 team. And they had a very interesting weekend because I'll get to this in a second, but they're on that opening lap, and it was one of the more interesting opening laps I've seen in a while. They were going wheel to wheel almost all the way around the track. And Silverstone is a very fast track.
Right.
It's got a lot of straightaways, a lot of fast sweeping turns. It's considered one of the fastest tracks on the course. They had actually had contact earlier on in the lap, but then the big controversy came as they entered a really high-speed turn. Lewis Hamilton came in on the right and just completely outdove Verstappen. Now, the racing line is more, you can't see this through the podcast, but the racing line is more to the left and you come in wider. He just dove in on this side and basically just sort of put Verstappen in the position of either you got to stop and get out of the way because I'm coming through or we have to hit. And unfortunately, they hit and Verstappen crashed off the course. Pretty high speed. Yeah. He actually had a pretty big hit. Hit a tire barrier and was out of the race immediately. I mean, everyone knew it. The car was trash. And there's been all this controversy since as to whether that was legit, if that was just racing. And it does. It really brings up, I've been trying to explain this to people who don't necessarily know racing very well, but they do have racing stewards that look at everything that and they make decisions sometimes. And in this case, they did end up giving Hamilton a 10-second penalty.
Okay.
So he had to go in when he went into the pit. He had to add 10 seconds onto his stop.
Right.
So they the pit stops in F1 take, if you're doing it right, they take less than 2 seconds.
Okay.
So he had to do that, do everything they have to do, and then he had to wait 10 seconds. Then this little thing goes up and you can go. He ends up winning the race anyways. The fact that by it happening on early enough in the race, he had enough time to basically make up for it. And he's had many races where if they do everything right from start to finish, he's 25 seconds ahead of sometimes the next non-Mercedes teammate.
Sure.
So 10 seconds really isn't that bad for him at all. So he really, he comfortably won the race. This one, it was a little bit more up in the air. In the last 5 laps or so, I think he had to come back and actually pass Charles Leclerc and his Ferrari to actually get to the win. But his car was much faster. It was never really in doubt. But, to answer Scott's question, it's a really tough, I don't know exactly how to do it better. I think they do the best that they can, but sometimes there's racing incidents. Sometimes, yeah. And sometimes you have to be aggressive. You have to like sort of make the other guy, you know.
What was this regulation like, say, in the glory days of F1, you want to call it the 60s or whatever?
There pretty much wasn't, but there wasn't a lot of regulation, you know? I mean,
is there a direct correlation between, like, I guess, racing?
Well, so, but a lot of, but there's been a lot of ugly incidents, I would argue, in between that's forced them to. So, and the ugliest, the one I always point to, basically, it goes back to mid to late 90s. Michael Schumacher and Damon Hill are separated by 1 point. Michael Schumacher has like a 1 point lead over him going into the last race in the championship. So, if both guys don't finish, Michael Schumacher wins the world championship. Well, suddenly Michael Schumacher dove in on Damon Hill in the corner and took them both out of the race. Wins the world championship.
Wow.
So, but that was like, that was kind of considered a relatively egregious move.
Sure.
So they've been trying to stop stuff that, but like it's kind of hard.
So is it safety they're trying to regulate, or is it, are they trying to
It's also safety, but also, but stopping things like that too. Yeah, like they just don't want like, and so, I mean, and I've listened to a lot of different experts and commentators in the time in between. Everybody's about, it's about half and half as to whether that was legit or not what he did. But, I mean, I guess my argument is that there's no way Hamilton would have made, if Max Verstappen's car had not been there, Hamilton would have gone much wider. And if someone had been right behind him, they would have gotten around him. It was definitely he was going to go through the corner very slowly based on where he was. Verstappen had the racing line. But the way the regulations go, and you, again, you can't see this, but if you get your wheel far enough ahead, there's kind of a point where it's like it's considered like you're up here now, so this driver is the one who's supposed to theoretically maybe back off.
Right.
He didn't.
Right.
He turned in too, and they touched. Now, Hamilton's car got damaged too, but they red flagged the race, and so he got the benefit of everybody had to come into the pits and stop, and so they changed his tire, which was broken, or his wheel. His wheel was broken. They changed it, and so he didn't really get a penalty from that. But, I mean, if that hadn't happened, then, you know, Hamilton's risking something too. I mean, contact with both cars is bad, and he could have been thrown off the track, you know, for doing that. There was a lot of back and forth. The way the Formula One is covered, you get to hear all the radio conversations. So you immediately hear Christian Horner, who's the Red Bull principal, you know, just get on and just absolutely like make his case to the racing steward, the head racing steward, like, you know, you got to do something. This is ridiculous. That was reckless and dangerous. He's a desperate man trying to win back the championship. And then I thought this was kind of funny. The principal of Mercedes is this guy named Toto Wolff. You know, very German.
It's a great name. Yeah,
very German. Very very calm and sort of precise with everything he does. He gets on and he asks the steward, "I just sent you an email that shows the rules in the books, and then also some photos that show that we were within the rules for what we did." The racing steward calmly writes back or replies back, "I don't check my email while I'm watching the race." So it set off this chain of events that they covered on TV of Toto Wolff running through to try and get to the steward's office with like photos and PDFs of like what he was trying to show. Yeah. So, but it's a, I guess to, again, to try and go back and answer his question, it's a really tough, it's tough. I would say the pendulum has swung too far into the, they're regulating it too much and they're not letting them race enough.
Right.
But it's not maybe as far as some people might think. I think it needs to come back about 20%. You know, just let them bang wheels.
The UFC of auto racing.
Well,
and I know that probably exists on some level in small towns and dirt tracks and stuff.
Well, one thing the Red Bull team was pretty upset about, and I'll give them a little credit for this. So in 2019, which is the last year of sort of the full budget, unregulated numbers, Red Bull had, there were three teams, Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes, all had budgets north of $430 million a season. They're working with, under a voluntary salary cap, I think they're at $175 million. So although that's still quite a lot of money, that's a big difference. And he made the point of saying, like, you know, it's going to cost $1.7 million to fix the car that was just trashed at this race. And we're going to have to do that because we're under salary cap restrictions. I mean, back in the day, they probably would have just, you know, digitally printed out a new car altogether. Yeah. But, and he's like, you know, that's $1.7 million that we can't spend on something else down the stretch when maybe this championship really heats up. So I can see why these things have to be in there. But, you know, I don't know. I think giving Hamilton the 10-second penalty was appropriate.
Yeah.
He won, but he came back and still won. And I think they're doing the best they can under the circumstances, but maybe regulating a little too much of the racing.
Right.
To answer your question, I think they are doing too much of it, but you know, there's too much money involved to have people crashing into other cars and smashing out.
That's it. I guess it's something.
For safety too.
Well, I hadn't thought about like sort of trying to take people out is something that
they do that. I mean, they absolutely do that. I mean, Michael Schumacher, Damon Hill was the most egregious example of that because Damon Hill loses the championship as a result. So
I'm gonna YouTube that tonight, Doug.
Absolutely, it's out there. I've looked at it a million times. So yeah. So, anyways, that's I guess that's the.
Yeah.
Ask the steering committee.
Yeah, I like it. Segment. We can do this again if you have a question or comment.
We have questions. Yeah, please send them in. We will absolutely do our best.
Yeah, answer. Be nice, but you know.
Why is your voice grating and nasally? Really?
Why are you recording your show in the middle of a noisy bar?
Well, I'm well into that too, though. So.
Well, the beer. It's this catch-22. The beer makes for better conversation.
Beer makes for better conversation. Yeah, we need a break from our routine. We need to have a little, once the money starts rolling in, we build the steering committee podcast studio. Maybe we won't have to do that.
It'll be nearly as fun, but
yeah,
we'll take a quick break.
Yeah,
we'll be back. We're back.
Yeah. And we're wrapping up here because
it's a little loud.
It's a little loud.
What you're gonna get? That's the sound of dollars streaming into this business.
That's true. It is pretty busy here.
So go Ryan.
Compared to last Sunday.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm a little sore sitting here. Yeah. Like I said,
we also have to end early, because you're broken. You broke yourself today.
Broken.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm broken, Doug. It's that I'm 45, almost 46. And did make the mistake of going out with a couple of buddies this morning for a nice mountain bike ride. Staunton State Park, if you're here in Colorado. And we made the classic mistake, Doug, of going all the way to the top, climbing, getting to the top, and then discovering that the trail downhill, which is a nice straight pass shot to the parking lot, was closed for some sort of remediation or planting or something.
And when you told that, I was like heartbreaking because you'd gone like 11 miles at that point.
Yeah, 11 or 12 miles.
And so but I guess I don't know mountain biking enough. Is it not possible for you to go back the way you came?
Well, that would have been a long...
It would have been downhill, though, right?
It would have been downhill, but it would have been, 11 or 12 miles versus the mile or two that we were hoping.
Oh, okay. And you thought you were almost at the end of your trip.
Right. And then, fortunately, the guys who were with me can read a map better than I can. We found a sort of workaround, and it was still a good time. But this is probably, I think this was 15 miles and, over a couple thousand feet. I think it was even close to 3,000 feet of elevation. I'm hurting, Doug. That's
it. Now, I don't mountain bike as much or at all, even. Is it like when you're going downhill?
This isn't
though?
The mountain biking podcast, but.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
But I do like to grind my gears.
It's not called the handlebar committee, it's the steering committee. Yeah. But like when you're going downhill, though, is there any similarities to.
I do think it's kind of like you sort of get into that zone. I'm hardly good at it, but I am good at going downhill, or pretty decent at going downhill. I think by virtue of my 250 pounds more than anything, but you sort of get in that zone and you find that line, and of course the line's a little different. I mean, ultimately it's all about traction, right? But at least when you're on blacktop, the road surface doesn't change nearly as much.
That's true.
I think there's definitely a line between the two
there's a nice connection, man and machine.
Yeah, and you get the bonus of getting the shit kicked out of you and feeling healthier the next day.
That's true, yeah. You know? Get that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, driving the car isn't exactly the workout that... You go back in 100 years.
No, I mean,
it's probably a little more of an adventure,
Getting back to our drive, though, I mean, I definitely had a few, I wouldn't say adrenaline moments, but moments where, like, my heart was pumping. I was excited. I was enjoying it. But it wasn't like, you're right, I wasn't working very hard, though. So
this is back. We're jumping around a bit, but we're talking again about this drive we got there, buddy Andrew. Yeah. So it was Doug and his Subaru Legacy GT, me and my GT4.
Yeah.
And our friend Andrew and his 997 Carrera 4.
Yeah. So we have a 2.5 liter four-cylinder flat. You have a 4 liter flat six.
Yeah.
And what is that?
3.6. He's got a 3.6.
He's got a 3.6. Okay, all right. So he's closer to you.
But only one of us had a turbo.
Yeah, that's why I was. Yeah, I was flying right up your
exhaust
pipes.
So, what were your impressions just being behind two Porsches? I'm sure it was kind of fun.
Well, my impression is that you guys, I was working a lot harder than you guys were to catch
to
keep up.
We had.
I was watching Andrew. I was watching you. You were not touching the brake pad as nearly as much as I was, like going into corners, which is it's a testament to the There's no substitute for Porsche,
I was up front just seeing the 997 behind me in silver. I think it's GT silver. I think his car might be an Arctic silver or something. It's a little different, a little lighter, but man, it looks really good. Or maybe it is GT silver, but it looked really good behind me. It looked like like I told him, a 959. It just had that stance, the wide body of the four, the color, the round headlights. It just, it really looked good.
Yeah, the 997s, I mean, the moment, the point in time when those things were still like a bargain, that's gone. Everyone knows that they're great. They're great 911s. Yeah. They all want them now.
Could you hear us?
Like that, so.
Yeah, and was my car any louder? I'd just be curious. Could you hear mine over his, or his over mine?
I couldn't hear you guys that much. But then, as we got into some of the more on the second half of that Evans.
So we ran up to Mount Evans. We went.
There's some parts where there's a couple of hairpins where you sort of the road doubles back on itself.
Yeah, yeah.
I could hear you guys as you would blast out of the turn. So Ryan was in lead, Andrew was second, and I was behind. So as we came into a sharp turn, I put my window down on purpose, and I could hear you guys sort of driving off as you were coming past me. Your car was louder.
The reason I asked
is because
the gearing.
Yeah.
When you're out on a Sunday or whatever it was, and there are lots of people out there, you're constantly going back and forth between first and second gear. And some of these idiots who are on the mountain who just out of courtesy, if not the law, won't get out of your way.
Yeah.
And so you're constantly dropping down to first.
Yeah.
And so it was really tough for me to find my groove. And I wasn't trying to make noise or show off or something. It really was more like second gear was too... I wasn't going fast enough for second.
Yeah.
And I was going too fast for first, basically. Not too fast, but
yeah,
it was just...
It's almost like you were basically, for most of that trip, you were like at the top end of first gear, low end of second gear.
I guess the reason to ask if you heard it was probably super obnoxious being behind, or was the sound so beautiful?
Well, I wasn't close enough to hear you guys on, like, when we were on straightaways, like when you were probably opening it up. I couldn't hear you then. I was listening. I was looking for it because I would like to hear that. I had no music because my streaming service didn't have cell phone coverage up there, so I had no music on in my car. But like when we got into those tight corners, I could hear you guys pulling out.
Yeah.
I mean, your car definitely is louder, but I think that's because it's it's a GT car. But his car also has its own sort of the best sounding car. Well, next to you guys was when an AMG sedan and a GT350 went the other way.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. I happened to be in the right position to hear the AMG. He got on it.
Yeah.
The AMGs are great sounding engines.
Yeah, I just don't really care for the look, the swagger or whatever of those.
And I don't disagree with that, but I have to say the engine itself, I mean, I just want to transplant that into something else. Like, it's just like, it's such a, there's something about like a precision.
Who are you, Aston Martin?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess they're sort of the engine provider of the world right now.
Right.
But I mean, there's something great about a high tech sounding V8. Because a V8 to me I've always associated with being like the kind of the simplest of performance engines.
V8s. I don't want to say almost from the very beginning, but probably
Earlier ones that we've adopted, and it's in a lot of American cars, which aren't necessarily sophisticated. Yeah. But when it's like German engineering applied to the same sort of like, shape and sound and sort of with like similar headers and things like that, but with all that precision, it's just like, I like that sound. I think the Audi 4.2 liter V8 is one of the best sounding V8s out there, and arguably one of the best sounding engines out there. But I think, AMG is the same thing. So, even if they're turbocharged now, they sound amazing. But your car, and then the best time I heard your car was when we actually stopped for the day. We pulled over, and you turned around and you came back to me. I think you threw me a few revs, and that did remind me that we're dealing with a different level of beast, basically.
It's a fun, fun car. It was a fun drive. I was reminded how difficult it is to lead any sort of group of cars, even if it's just two.
Oh yeah, you did a great job.
Thanks. It's frustrating being in the front because you want people to get out of your way, move over for you. You want to go fast enough. Yeah. You don't want to go too fast. I understand that there's a spectrum of abilities of the cars, if you want to call it that. I'm trying to be PC here. I'm kidding. No, you kept
definitely
it really well.
Definitely some liabilities at my end.
I'm kidding.
I'll be the first to admit it. That car is a lot of fun to drive, but it's certainly it's not in the same class or league as those guys.
A 2006 C4 with the manual, I think, is probably a 4.5 second car to 60, or not too far off. So,
I mean, my observation was that you guys were touching your brake lights a lot less than I was.
So maybe that's it. Maybe it's just it all comes down to the brakes.
Well, I think it's that, and it's just, I mean, I think the Subaru understeers a little bit. Yeah, you have to really kind of overcome it a little bit. So it understeers going in a little bit. I was definitely, and it's it's down in displacement. It's an all-wheel drive car, but it does all right.
I thought you put in a good show, and
thank you. I only risked my daughter's life a little bit.
You're nothing but responsible, except when you're driving across the country without headlights.
I think all evidence points to the contrary. But what were you going to say?
No, I almost brought something up there for a second, but we'll save that for something about poison in the well. But
I got you. But it definitely, but having that car, and actually, like I said in the last episode, like, that car is so much better on the highway.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit more flustered in tight corners.
Sure.
It does okay considering it's a very practical car, but it's not a true sports
car. But I bet you came away from that probably wanting a P car more than ever.
Every time we do this, the first thing I do is I go completely nuts and I go searching for Caymans and 997s and even 996s now. I'm kind of back on them again.
Doug, that's what I do.
Yeah.
You could have bought them for half the price 2 years ago, but no.
That's true.
Now at the peak of the market.
It's a big financial decision, but I definitely think I'm kind of like into this idea of like just buy a brand new Cayman T.
Yeah.
And just try and finance it. I don't think we can do it anytime. We can't do it in the next 6 months. But I'd almost rather do that than buy an old Cayman and be chasing problems for a while.
Well, that was kind of my philosophy, I guess, when I went from a 2005 to a 2017 or whatever.
So I have to get on your extended financing sort of plan, and then it's the same as buying a less expensive car but paying it off in 4 years.
You can trust this man if you're listening, and they're a money lender.
I get all my life advice from you. I think this is what I need to do.
The credit union. I wish I had found out about credit unions when I was a kid instead of found out when I'm in my 40s. But credit unions are absolutely the best place to find it. And they will finance, in my experience, a car that maybe someone else wouldn't. If we're good, thank you. Good. Yeah.
The great service here. They make sure you're doing okay.
That's right. I get that too.
Don't you think a Cayman T would have been the right car to have in that group?
I'm
sort of the ultimate Cayman.
And then
the ultimate, maybe the entry-level driver's car version of the Cayman, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
So,
it's obviously a great platform, and I think there's some advantages, obviously, to having the turbo in the mountains. And look what's happened to the 991 Carrera T prices, I guess it was just
I looked at those two. I feel like they're still hovering around the $85,000.
Low end, and I feel like, it's... Anyway. Yeah. We should probably wrap this up, Doug. I'm sorry. I need to go.
As we mentioned, you're broken. You need to go home and nurse your wounds a little bit.
I'm leaning to one side.
All right. Well, thanks again to Bruce
the beer
providing
help,
great ambiance and great beer. And we'll call it.
If you want a t-shirt,
Well,
it'll be in the mail as a yeah, Monday, tomorrow.
Our contest winners, you're yeah. getting your t-shirts. Yes. I'm looking at the packaging right now. They were going to be picked up tomorrow yeah. and delivered to you. So congratulations to all our t-shirt winners. And, you know, stay tuned.
We'll do this again.
Stay tuned. We'll have some more contests. We'll do
t-shirts.
Something fun. Yeah. So, yeah. Ryan, let's go ahead and we'll end the steering committee
we'll
meeting.
It.
So, yeah.
And off to the...
So you can get to
off the medicine
cabinet.
So
go to urgent care.
All right. So, thanks, Doug.
Yeah.
Talk to y'all soon.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.